Welcome to Tilt Talk Radio. Do not adjust your dial. You have the right program. Today we'll be going over some notes from the field. And with me today, Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilties out there.
And I'm Bill Schomburg. Hey guys, both from Tilt Agronomy. How you doing, Todd?
Doing good.
Matt's enjoying a little R&R.
Yeah, hopefully he's doing good. I've not heard from him, so I'm sure
that
means he's doing good. Heard a little bit from him.
A little bit?
Yeah, he's good. So
he texted me if I needed anything from the left-handed store.
The left-handed store?
So he must have found a left-handed store. I said a scissors would be good.
Is that what? So as a left-hander, you've got left-hand scissor problems?
Left-hand problems.
Looking if there's no scissor around me to grab it with my right hand to see what. I didn't realize that was the. There's no other left-hander problems. Is that what the whole store is full of? Is just scissors?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
What other left-hand problems?
I don't know. What other issues? I mean, you always have, you know, as a kid writing with a pencil, you always had the stuff in the back of your hand from dragging across the.
Yeah, you have paper. You have to like push
right.
And whereas right-handers, we get to drag.
You get to pull.
To pull.
Scissors is the main thing because it doesn't like fit in your fingers. It's backwards.
This is weird. Okay.
Yep. I mean, it cuts fine. It just doesn't fit. Like you probably feel like it fits right in there.
Did you ever ask for any like left-handed pens or pencils?
No. I don't think that matters. Yeah.
A left-handed sweep net or left-handed soil probe.
Soil probe. That'd be good.
That'd be a left-footed.
It would be interesting to walk through the store to see all the crazy things people have.
Right. You probably just want to know what you're...
Right.
You don't even know what you're missing. As
I do have my own can opener at home.
Because
apparently the way I open cans is crazy. So my wife's like, you get your own. Because every time I give you mine, you break it. So
you got your own special can opener.
Can opener, yep. Yep. That's it.
Lefty. I don't know. I could see baseball glove.
You have
problems with that.
You just don't get the choices.
Right. Golf clubs.
I swing.
Yeah. I forgot. You swing. You right, left, but you swing
and
right.
Yeah.
So then it's not a problem.
It's not a problem. No. But left-handed gloves definitely get fewer choices.
Yeah. Not
maybe not today because there's a billion choices, but
right.
Back in the day.
It says 10% of the world's population is left-handed.
10%. Huh?
Yeah. Some countries having more. Netherlands reporting 13% being left-handed. Wow. So I don't know why they would have more than other
people. I feel like it's less than that.
You don't know. So 1 out of 10 people, you don't know.
I feel like it's less than that.
I thought you had like a club that you'd report to.
It is funny how you pick it up, though. I was in the doctor's office with my son this morning, and the nurse was left-handed. He was cutting some things left-handed, and you notice that as a lefty. And then at graduation this year, they were doing some like, it was a window and they had the camera behind the window and then people were signing the graduates were signing their names on the window, like signing out for the last time or something. And of course, I picked up on
who was lefty.
And there was like, out of 100 kids, there was like 3.
Okay.
4. So I feel like that's the, not 10, I feel like it's more.
One of your kids is left.
None
are?
You guys
I've know. Yeah, we, yes, you're right. The rest of us all have
the odd
1 out of 3 kids being left-handed. Yeah.
That's a high percentage, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's different. Like you say, the writing thing is always, we're watching them push across the paper. And yeah, you probably can tell lefty by having you hold your, like the part of your palm under your pinky up and it's full of ink.
Yep. Ink or pencil, yep. I know in Catholic school, my wife's sister, they made her.
Oh, they switched.
They switched her to right-handed.
Yeah, that's true. How many of older anybody that was that is lefty, or like you, where you bat or swing a golf club or baseball bat right-handed, but you're left-handed. So yeah, that's true too. How many people got switched back in the day?
Right.
The bigger news today is what episode we're at. Because can you believe it, we made it this far?
No chance.
I didn't think so either. So yeah, it's a fun, we were up to the Tree Fitty episode.
And he said, I need about Tree Fitty.
Tree Fitty?
Well, it was about that time I got suspicious. I said, Chef, why do you need Tree Fitty? He said,
So I know you're a South Park fan.
Yeah.
Though, and yeah, I'm sure you remember while, Chef's Dad with the Loch Ness Monster and the Tree Fitty. Yeah, so 350 episodes. It's more than I would have ever expected either. So I appreciate all the listeners out there who tuned in and have been there for us over the last, you know, 5-6 years of this. And it's been a lot of fun.
Hard to believe we started this
pre-COVID. I mean, you and I even had a run before that when podcasts were first a thing where we did some episodes. And, yeah, it's been a lot of fun to go back and listen to a few and kind of – I know the next one that Matt's really excited about is actually 365. I believe you're excited about that too.
Yep.
Because when you can get to one per day, one he per said, day. Then it's more of like a real thing. I'm sure. Like, okay. So, and yeah, hopefully we make it to 400 and more. And yeah, we appreciate all the listeners out there for tuning in.
Definitely.
For our episode, Tree Fitty.
Well, good. So a little notes from the field today, huh?
Yeah. So when I got the two agronomy brothers here, I figured we could just talk about what's going on out there. Cause this does slow down this time of year, but I don't think it really slows down. It's just less. You just don't need to be making decisions always right away. Yep. Whereas when we're in herbicide time, everything's timely, everything's urgent. And right now just things are less urgent, but they're still important.
I got thinking about that because I had a couple scouts complaining about hours. Like we weren't getting hours. Like it is, the things do like we got over that hump and it seems like June is just a beast.
June's crazy every year. And I even, like, I prepare for May and June. Like, okay, I'm going to be ahead. Got this all worked out. And you can't prepare for just having to check many things recheck things.
Right,
and
we're doing so much, right?
Everything happens at once.
We're finishing planting. Hopefully we're done planting. But we're spraying. We're fertilizing. Stuff's coming out of the ground, making sure that looks good. Like, just so much going on. And then we get to... seems like that mid-July, and you're right, Todd, it just things kind of slow down, and it's like, okay, we are pretty much where we are. There's a few things we want to watch. Like now I feel like it's insect season, right? We're watching.
Right. Insect diseases, just trying to watch. Yep.
It's been boring.
It's been really, so as far as bugs and insect pressure go out there, it is, I just scouting, just in general, comparing our scouting notes from previous years and this year's, just seeing a lot less of everything. I just not many for soybean aphids, not many for alfalfa leafhopper. I mean, I've had to spray fields so it's not like there's nothing, but it's just way down. Like IPM is really working this year.
Your territory is so much bigger north to south than mine is.
Right.
So I don't think I've sprayed one alfalfa field for leafhoppers, minus throwing it in with new seeding.
Yeah, I had some new seedings that I've swept. Even one unique one last week where there was three fields around it. One was a neighbor field, and like the rest of them are all low, but they all moved to this one new seeding. Yeah. So we had to spray that for bugs, you know, special. But in general, no, they haven't been that bad at all.
And I've been through two, three weeks here. Weeks we've been looking for western bean cutworm egg masses, and we can't find a single one.
We've found some of those, but nothing. They're again not crazy.
Was that in the?
Or that items? Was so. Yeah, it was south Wisconsin. You know, southern Wisconsin. Our trap counts down there for those moths were this week. It was 35 moths. So it's not.
I wouldn't
call that high.
No,
but it's not low either.
Well, and I looked at my trap. That's in. It's near Surin in the sand there. And I missed counting it last week. And this week.
Oh, man, you missed it.
I missed a week. Sorry.
No, it's all screwed up.
I know. I had 37 for 2 weeks.
Okay.
So it's really not that bad at all.
Those are 100 or moths or more would be where you'd start to say, okay, these.
Yeah, looking at the one, they haven't posted this week yet. Looks like they may post today, but. Lake Mills had 250 last week for western bean cutworms. Oostburg had 63. So really, like, everything else is 20, 30 or less. a lot of zeros. Fort Atkinson had 66. So really, yeah.
Right. So they're there. They're going to, I mean, I do think we are going to have them places that like this where Lake Mills gets hammered. Like right. They seem very localized mm-hmm. this year.
Yeah.
That areas, you know, most areas you're not going to see any, and then certain areas you might see more. So just the, yeah, just that way the bug counts are a little bit. You missed a great episode last week. We got to talk to all our friends at NACC.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
a lot of fun. Me and I got to,
was bummed about that.
Yeah. You missed a good time.
I was looking at poor weed control in Indiana is what I was looking at.
A lot
at.
Of water, him?
Oh, yeah. It's probably Palmer, but.
Really? Bean fields,
bad. I was very happy and disappointed at the same time.
Yeah, like, sure.
It's going to feel so bad for what we're doing.
It's somewhere else, but.
You get like past Fair Oaks.
Okay.
That's where I notice it the most.
Where else in just Palmer coming through?
Between Fair Oaks and Indianapolis was not very good control. And that's all it was. It wasn't grass. It wasn't
right.
volunteer. It was
just beans and water.
It was either water hemp or Palmer.
How much? How beans were probably, say, 2 feet tall.
Yeah, it was about 6 inches.
6 inches above.
Very yeah. noticeable.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
This week I'm headed to Cedar Rapids, so we'll see what I
see. What I when we talked to Alan last week.
Oh yeah.
With Alpha Egg, he said like it's just. Beans for miles that look great, and corn for miles that looks great. Cool. So it is like
thanks, Alan.
What we like Iowa just
yeah.
It's just like it just grows beans and corn.
When we have to go play ball there, my family's like, this is such a boring drive.
Oh, that'd be like.
And then for me, it's like
yeah.
This is I have a hard time keeping her on the road.
Well, right, you're like great field, and then you're probably rubbernecking all.
Oh yeah, and now this week they'll be flying planes everywhere.
Right, sure. Sure. Yeah, Alan did say they were doing, well, they did set a lot of it tasseled already, and mm-hmm. they did a lot of fungicide applications already, so yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, if any listener hasn't listened to a great episode to kind of get an idea of what's going on out there, and really, all the regions we talked to, we're kind of saying the same thing, just very low insect pressure. Casey Carr out of Michigan did talk about the Colorado potato beetle. And so some of these that are just always a really tough problem pests that
when they fight that one with that's resistance and stuff.
Correct. Too, right? And that's mainly what she was getting into of like how they're fighting it and stuff. But yeah, so really that's kind of one good note from the field this year of just, yeah, IPM's working, watch your field, sweep them, check them, and then, you know, do what you have to accordingly. And I would you agree, like we get to past into August. I mean, we can get some bug, like we talk Western meat cutworm. There's bugs still coming, but they're not typically something that we, you know, we get past this time.
And Western bean, by the time we get to August, yep, we're going to have worms by then.
Right.
And we can't do anything right. about and it. It's now right. they're in, you'd be out there.
Correct. Bucking. They'd be in the ear and your past
yeah.
the time.
Yeah. And even, you know, I get to like second week of August and aphids start to naturally right. go away. So you yeah. kind of just get to a point where, for us, our scouts kind of start leaving. I was asking the three of them today when they were thinking their last day was. And one's got to go the end of the first week, but the other two are leaving the second end of the second week. And that's like a perfect time. Like things really start to
slow down. Yeah. What I think is, like you said, you're going to have localized and you're going to have certain areas that have bugs, but this is even, it's just a far less number. So you can say as scouts go, that it should be okay timing and mm-hmm. be good. Yeah, the other thing we're scouting for right now is disease. And this one's been hard. Like there's nobody out there riling up people that you got to spray for bugs. We were joking. I remember back in the day, I had it was a sprayer guy, and he, I don't know why he never had a sweep net. He would use his hat to sweep the hay.
Oh, perfect.
And then he would be like, look at all the leaf hopper. You got to spray.
Yeah.
And
we did have that though, Todd, in when they were cutting second crop.
True, we had the high PFAS thing.
And everyone was like, oh,
right, God, and then everybody, you're right, and then in the third, they're like, we got to spray because they're. But that ended up really not. I don't want to say it was a nothing.
It was a nothing,
but it really was. Yeah. It wasn't. And if anything, that got a lot of our natural enemies up. But nobody gets all riled up. But you're right. There's times where certain insects do. But with diseases, right now, gosh, that's a very. I think we used to have to talk guys into using fungicide. Now it's more of a talk people out of. It used to be like we had to justify it. This is why we should use it. Now it's a little bit harder that it seems like. Sometimes the default's more like, well, we're going to use fungicide and why not? So first thing really to watch is watch your hybrid and how good it is on diseases and not. And I don't know what you're seeing for disease out there. And we're at a tough spot in Wisconsin here where we're kind of the last ones to get stuff. So we can look on like Crop Protection Network, Google that up, check the map for your county and see the counties around you. And see what's being found, but just in general, it's not a crazy disease year. Is there disease out there? Yes, of course there's disease. There's places that are getting it.
Mm-hmm.
There's certain areas that, yes, I understand fungicides and automatic in your area, but there's still a lot of parts of the Midwest that it's not an automatic. That unless you have a very poor hybrid or you've got to say a really bad history of a certain disease, you may be able to skip it this year.
Well, and I would just talk to a guy today about that. We got the farmer and then his hired man actually farms some ground too, and I consult for both of them. And the hired man has got like 200 acres and it's all grain. There's no silage, and obviously then the other guy is a dairyman, and we still have BMR there, so he's ramping up to spray his BMR. And I looked at his hired man, and I'm like, what do you think? And then he's like, I don't know. So I asked the dairyman, and he's like, okay, it's $39 to do this.
Right.
$40. And I'm like, so I looked at the hired man guy, and I'm like, can we get I don't think we can get 10 bushel repeatably. Maybe we can. But he's like, I don't want to take that risk. That's a lot of money to throw out there in a lower disease year. And last year, remember, we had the southern rust explosion. Correct. And we learned this winter that was kind of a weird weather storm that split and kind of sucked the spores around through. And that's how we got it. So the likelihood of us in Wisconsin, again, is low.
There's, looking on Crop Protection Network, there's some counties in Missouri, some counties in Iowa that have some southern rust reported, but you know, I don't even feel like I'm going on a limb here to say
no,
we will not have a southern rust problem.
Right, right.
And then you work in the tar spot. I mean, that one does creep up. There's, you know, even up into, there is a report now in Kewaunee County.
Oh, there is now.
So there's some up here.
That's our colleague. That's
as of the 21st of July.
Sure.
And like, again, is it here? Yes. But the amount of reports too are pretty low, you know, and it'll be like one per county, a lot of Iowa counties, a lot of Nebraska counties. So I think that could be a problem more for
looking at
that area than say Minnesota, you know, Illinois, right, and us.
And tar spot likes moderate temperatures. We had 90s all week last week, and that's too, not what it wants.
It was actually too hot for tar spot for a while there. So yes, that is an odd thing too.
This week is better.
Right. This week would be more of a week to watch out. And I believe that's what the model showed too. Like, this is where it'll start coming on. Hopefully, you know, your corn may be past, you know, bigger than where you're going to be a problem.
Yeah. Because I think for the most part, we're R1, R2. There's a lot of corn in the blister stage already, surprisingly.
Really?
Yeah. We got some early.
Early, okay, yeah. Early
May 10th planted 92-day corn. That's.
I could
count kernels.
Yeah. No, it's actually an exciting. We're going to get to this later in the episode of GDUs, but just looking at the crop, it's ahead of normal. Like, we're just.
Yeah.
Like, we're ahead by a week, easy.
Easy. Yep.
So, yeah, so out there scouting for disease, this is a very good year for that too, to check. One of the hard parts with disease, different than insects, is you can't really react to disease because all these fungicides we use are not curative, they're preventative. So that's why I think it's good to use some scouting and then use how your hybrid is on disease resistance. So like we talked about, like BMR hybrids are poor on disease.
Yeah.
So it's more of an easier payback on something like that. So be looking at that. This is a pretty good week for that and kind of check in. The models are helpful. I forgot Tar Spotter was sunsetted. That I always liked that app a lot.
Yep.
So that also, I'll direct you to that Crop Protection Network, and there's the models on there that you can run to see for your county, your township of what it looks like for disease tar spot severity coming up or potential for tar spot.
You seeing silks coming out before some tassels?
Yeah. Yeah, remember last year we had...
We had a whole tassel wrap. We had a whole song.
Yeah, we had the wrap. Yeah, that was. We had Matt's not here to do the wrap for us again, but we had a whole song on it this year. I'm actually calling it loose tassel wrap.
Loose.
So it's not tight. You shake the plant, the tassel kind of comes out.
Well, with the wind we've had the last 2 days, that should have helped
just,
a lot.
It's like a very slow emerging tassel.
Mm-hmm.
Or a fast emerging silk. I don't know which. I think it's both, but yeah.
I do see a lot of. I thought it was just a phenomenon last year, but the Corteva Genetics again is throwing one branch on the tassel.
Sure, some of these hybrids have a very different weak tassel. I don't know what you even call that. Where it's.
And it's not even like the branching,
right? Maybe that's good to say. This is a non-branching tassel. Yeah. And even the ones where I'd call have this loose tassel wrap, say they do have branches underneath, they're not making it out just like the top part is out.
Right. And so, after last year, we didn't really have an issue. So
correct. Researching on it, looking, there's potential. It's definitely different than last year. It's different. Last year, it was like bound up in there. This year, it's more like that flast inner node. Never pushed out. It never really extended properly. We were growing so fast the last 2 weeks. I even have fields where really weren't supposed to tassel yet.
Mm-hmm.
And they're throwing tassel, which tells me like something happened. Even in some of the models that we use for GDUs to tell you when it should tassel, it was tasseling ahead of that. So it's telling you like it was just getting so much heat in one time that I think it was pushing it.
Right.
So yeah, but I've seen some hybrids perfectly fine.
Right, just
it
again hybrid specific.
Very high, yeah, hybrid growing condition specific. Mm-hmm. I did talk to Derek to see what he's seen in the plots, and he said some hybrids have that, some are fine.
Sure,
but again, he agreed like nothing. It's still like nothing. They still should pollinate fine. There shouldn't be any problems with pollination, and we should be okay with that. I do think we are seeing hybrids in general that are silking earlier, like just a trend towards the breeding programs are finding that's...
Well, I'd rather have my silk there before my pollen, right?
Correct. Correct. And I believe we talked about that on the tight tassel episode. Like the research does show you want... That you don't want silks there, and then there was a line to where if tassels came too much later, that it actually was
right
bad.
To a point, yeah.
So having that align as closely as possible is ideal, but yeah, this is just it just seems like so for our listeners, a lot of times we'll mark down tassel date because then you say 45 days mm-hmm. from then is corn silage,
right?
And this is another hard year to mark tassel date because. Because really, I think it has more to do with like silking and pollination. Like whenever all that happens, than it does shooting this tassel. And like we said, some of this is a little uneven of how it's emerging because some are slower than others, even within that same hybrid. So just an interesting year. Where I really saw it was in about 2 weeks ago in refuge corn. Some of the refuge corn was acting different than the rest of the field. So yeah, which do you think we should be calling it loose tassel wrap or slow-emerging tassel or fast-emerging silks? What do you think really is the phenomenon here for 2026?
I kind of feel it's the silk part of it. That's my
It's fast-emerging silks. Yeah.
Because it's in a lot of feet, a lot of different genetics, not just... Right. Like, I feel like last year, the tassel wrap, the really tight stuff was in one line of genetics.
Right.
And it seems like this year there's a little bit spread out on...
Right, more lines of genetics. I actually think it's the slow-emerging tassel. Like, I think for some reason it didn't make a final push... Then we got cooler, and it just didn't.
It's screw it. It's too hot. We're gonna wait.
Right. I don't.
We know the 70s are coming. We're gonna wait till then.
And then like I said, the good part of all this is nothing. It should pollinate fine. You shouldn't. There's nothing you're gonna do about it. So good. Any other notes from the field out there?
Not that I can think of. Just like you said, hey, we got our friend water hemp finding a way to live. That's. We've talked about that a little bit already, but just, you know, half the plant's dead and then whoop, here comes another. Then,
it resurrects up.
Another shoot.
Do you think it's worse than other years or the same or,
no.
or less? Yeah.
No, I think it's the same.
Yeah. Talking last week to NACC consultants and Jason Fusi out in Minnesota with Central, they had a tougher time, he said, with water. Like, just they threw everything at it. It was really tough.
We still just got to be early, right? I think early to some degree, we're still waiting too long.
Early is better.
Not at all, right? Just keep it not coming.
Right, or layer the residual, which we're doing. What I really makes me feel good about is the war on water hemp. If the 2026 battle, and we're not done with the battle yet, so we don't know.
Right.
But we definitely, in this part of Wisconsin, won the battle.
And what's crazy is I feel like, and I think I said it a couple of weeks ago, my Plenish beans are cleaner than my Enlist beans.
So the fomosaphens with, with the residuals.
And I think we just up the residuals. We get more aggressive with the residuals than we kind of almost, I don't want to say lazy with Enlist, but we just aren't as aggressive. And I think that's part of it. Because I got one farmer that does food-grade beans, and he's not super quick on getting things sprayed.
Right.
And
those are tougher.
Yeah.
I do think the timeliness of the spray and the residuals worked really well.
Right.
Helped a lot in the battle that we're going in. And
I got one grower that does Plenish, and there's two fields that were super wet and we couldn't get in. And instead of spraying water hemp that was seedlings, it was like 3 inches, and the Flexstar didn't do anything to it.
It there you go.
It needs it as a seedling.
It needs it as small as you can find. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do feel like we're learning better how to, like, we're used to the old school pop can height weeds.
Right.
We can, we're like, everything will kill that yet. So you just sort of.
No.
A 4-inch is still good. Now I think we're learning with water hemp really well. Like, you see it, you report it, and we get spraying on it. Right. It's not like we'll wait for more to emerge and stuff to be a little taller. It's like, it's time to spray.
Yeah. Yep. And I'm getting to the point where we got to have our first pass next spring has to be more residual than we normally do.
Okay.
Like a Sonic and Dual or just something like that. Not just Sonic. Like, remember all those years we did Sonic alone?
I follow what you're saying. It's going to be more mixes of things in there. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Well, let's move into our spotlight for today. So today's spotlight, we've got another GDU update. It's a good time for that. I know we've gotten a lot of questions.
I feel like as an agronomist, like, we should have this on our computer screen.
People
do those wedding countdown. Yeah. I don't know if they do that anymore. Maybe that's a 2000.
No, but like the widget
thing
on your phone.
Right.
That should be.
Because that's like a question weekly we get. Like, what's our... Are we ahead? Are we behind? What are we?
And sometimes it feels like we're a certain way, and we're not always
no.
as ahead or behind as we think.
No.
So yeah, we're going to look at three places for GDUs. So we'll start right here at Tilth World headquarters with Seymour, Wisconsin. And to date, we're at 1,246. Normal is 1,067. And we are about 79.
1,160.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Thank you. We need Matt here. He's just got the perfect cadence with that. About 79 more than normal. And the forecast is actually pretty good. So the next 14 days, even though we're in a cooler spell, we still are supposed to pack on to 1,589, you know, basically by early August. So now we, you know, that's always good too, to be a little cooler in pollination, which we are, and then making sure we still get some GDUs to finish off this corn. We're not, you know, at that number, we're ahead, but it's not sort of way ahead,
but we need more rain. Like, we're in dire need for some rain here.
Yeah, which is...
especially to the north.
Correct. There's areas.
That's areas that need rain. Like, I think right around world headquarters here, we're okay. But you get 50 miles north, and they got the heat, but now
they missed some of them rains, right?
Yeah.
And then verse 2025, we're basically... 2025, we're actually only at 1,100. So... We're significantly higher than actually last year, which I wouldn't have necessarily guessed that.
Basically 140 units higher than
last year. Yeah. So doing, and then very similar to 2024. So that, which there again too, we were a wetter year in 2024. So that one was a little bit different for our particular location. So we're going to jump south to Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, and they are at 1,370 to date, and that is 115 more than normal. So kind of way ahead in Sun Prairie, which I always like running Sun Prairie because they always seem like they're ahead of normal.
They always are.
It just doesn't make sense because then their normal should be higher, but their forecast too is over 1,700 in the total with the forecast of 2 weeks out. So really, you know, that area, really higher than normal. And then moving a little further south to Boone, Iowa. That's the site of the 2026.
We've never went that far show. South.
Yeah, I wanted to just see you down south a little bit more, where if they're kind of on normal or ahead. Well, so when you go to Iowa, you'll maybe see it. And the way Alan talked, Iowa was fairly normal, quote unquote. It wasn't
That's
normal ahead. And the way the GDU showed, same thing, is to date, they're at 1,565, and that's 37 more than normal. So,
and when your growers ask you why we can't grow Iowa corn,
it's because
they're 300 ahead of us
already.
Yeah,
and so the caveat of that, this is using a May 15th planting date.
Sure,
which some of our corn was ahead of that,
and some of their corn would be too.
And their corn, all would have been ahead of that. Yeah. So, yes, that is, like you say, that is why that it's different. Mm-hmm. So. That I'd heard, and I don't know the details, so I don't want to. But the corn growers yield plot and yield competition, National Corn Growers, they change it now to have more categories for day length of corn.
Yeah,
which I think is exciting.
It is good
because I feel like I'm so excited. I feel like it's like having weight classes in wrestling.
Well, and even like, because I have one grower and you do too, Todd. I don't know if he is, but my grower is all over it again this year. And last year we had 299. This year we're going to break that 300.
All right.
I know you did, so
yeah.
You have that bragging rights over me. But we were like trying to compete even against like Southern Wisconsin.
Right.
And you can't, we're not even, that's not even fair.
Yeah, it's correct.
So much less Iowa.
Yeah. So it'd be like adding divisions to it too, where you're,
you didn't want to wrestle a 175er?
I did not. I did have to wrestle guys above my weight class, and most of the time
didn't go well.
It was not. It did not work. So yeah, that'll be kind of neat for that to sort of sort some of that out. That with having a relative maturity. So
yeah.
All right. Thank you, Bill, and thank you to our listeners out there. Please subscribe to the podcast and tell a farmer friend. It's really easy. Just search Tilth Talk Radio and Apple Podcasts, Or on your Android phone, use an app like Spotify or Podcast Addict. You can also listen on your computer or smartphone browser. Go to tilthag.com/podcast. And you can follow us on Facebook and X at Tilth Talk Radio. So, yeah, like we talked earlier, this is our episode Tree Fitty. If you're still listening, hopefully you like what you're hearing. And all we ask you do is tell other farmers about our podcast. You are the best way to get the name out there. There's no other good ways.
Nope.
It's all on you to please tell them about the podcast, and we appreciate you listening and telling other farmers.
Cool.
All right, so we'll move into our cool beans. That's corny. So cool beans?
Cool beans.
Cool beans. So the cool beans this week goes back to National Corn Growers and talking about the Corn Growers.
So this isn't the contest.
No, sorry. This is just the association.
Association. Yes. Yep.
Okay. It's the association, and they commend the glyphosate petition withdrawal. So Revion, a subsidiary of Bayer, announced today that they will withdraw its petition to place countervailing duties on imported supplies of glyphosate, following intense pressure from National Corn Growers Association and other commodity groups. In response to this development, the NCGA president, Jed Bauer, released this statement. So we commend, this is from Jed Bauer, we commend Revion for listening to its customers and withdrawing this petition. As we have highlighted multiple times in recent weeks and months, input costs are top concerns of our growers, and for good reason. Actions like this plan to take what would have made an already bad situation even worse. So basically, yeah, they kind of withdrew this petition to add more costs that would have basically trickled down to the growers. So kind of good news on that for glyphosate.
Very good news.
Yeah, very, very good news.
Especially in a year like this when your return or your market price is so low, we're always looking at input costs.
Right.
We are anyway, but this year very much so.
Correct. And that moves right into our That's Corny for this week. And that is a new Illinois paper puts price tag on farming without glyphosate. So earlier we talked about basically adding, you know, more cost of glyphosate. But this, if there was an outright ban, and this is research out of Illinois, that it would cost Illinois corn and soybean growers $300 million to $609 million, so quite a range, per year if basically glyphosate went away. So basically, this newly published paper in Weed Technology that estimated that statewide annual loss, and the study frames that glyphosate not just as a herbicide input, but as a system tool that helps conservation tillage, reduce fuel and labor, and simplify weed control programs. So it wasn't like just the cost of the herbicide. It's these other things or the other herbicides that we'd have to use instead of glyphosate. It's also the reduced fuel and labor, which, say, in reduced tillage or especially like no-till situations,
right,
glyphosate's a very good tool for those times. So that's kind of why I think there was a wide range as well, because they're looking at that. So basically according to the paper, to achieve similar control replacement programs, we need more herbicide, we need more passes across the field, and we need tighter applications.
I don't think people really understand how important the tighter applications would be. Like glyphosate gives us such a wide window to get stuff done. Like,
Bill, you and I have a lot of conventional corn.
Yeah.
That we can't use Roundup Ready in, obviously.
Right.
And the grass, how we control grasses in that is...
It's brutal.
It's very different.
Painful, right?
Right. It's harder.
Yeah.
So and kind of why it matters now in Illinois is there is currently a bill in the state, HB 3803, titled Pesticides Glyphosate Ban, which would prohibit the distribution, sale, and use of glyphosate product in the state if enacted. And the bill was filed in February of 2025 and kind of had its first reading then. But basically, that's what this is in lieu of, to hopefully kind of show that we do need to use glyphosate properly, mm-hmm, for a lot of reasons. And a lot of those, why we're having to use it, is just because of resistant weeds as well, that we're having to make sure. I mean, our use of glyphosate's gone down in general over the last couple of years because of other things, and that's a good thing, and trying to make sure we use it properly. And like this paper shows, it still is a very useful tool in that toolbox, that if it's pulled from us, it's going to cost.
Yeah, it still works on a lot of weeds.
Right.
Still works great.
So, all right, we will wrap things up with a Feel Good Friday. And this week comes from a news article from Ag Daily, and that is how a blind roper and his Texas family are redefining access. So, young kid, that video is a lot of fun to watch. So, young kid from Edina, Texas, and riding a horse named Catalina, roper Elijah Feske caught his first live calf. In an instant, the arena didn't just erupt in cheer. It basically, the whole place erupted. It was cool. So Elijah is legally blind. His vision is 250 over 20, and he only has one seeing eye because of a congenital eye condition called coloboma. And so some of his areas of vision are even blacked out. So
that's crazy.
Yeah. So the watching the kid can ride a horse still really well, which is neat. And yeah, here's a quote from his adopted mom, Suzanne. When he's looking at a person, he only sees part of the person, and he and his mind puts all that together. So it's amazing to me. I mean, your eyes are connected directly to your brain.
Right.
So it's really like part of your brain. And how, even with low sight, how many people like this can still do things. And, you know, this boy has lived with this condition his whole life, but to even ride a horse is neat. And then to be able to rope a calf while on that horse is even neater. So just a lot of fun to see, just kind of a good feel-good story about a kid that basically has this eye deficiency, but still out there doing things every day with it.
If you're looking for a good smile, Google his video and check it out. Well, that'll wrap it up, huh, Todd?
Yeah, that is wrap it up. Episode Tree Fitty.
Tree Fitty. All done. Well, thanks for having us, and everybody happy farming.